The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, as he travels back to the United States for the summer. Well, it's another wet and dreary day here at the Edstone that he's left behind. I'm starting to get worried that I might have to swim home. I live in a small village, a short drive from Edstone, and when we get a lot of rain, the river floods and it cuts off all the roads in and out of the village, and river levels are right around flooding point at the moment. So that's my news, but there's no shortage of events to talk about around the world. There's, right now, even as we speak, the Conservative MPs are holding their first round of voting to determine who is going to be the leader of the Conservative Party and the UK's next Prime Minister. I'm just checking even now just to see if they've announced a result, but not yet. But probably even by the end of the program, they're just going to eliminate those that are in the worst position, those that are most behind. But the full round of voting, if it goes that far, will take a little bit longer. Well, one of the big news events of today comes from Iran. I come to you with some breaking news out of Iran. After covering that breaking news, I want to talk about a massive Iranian terrorist plot covered up not by Iran, but by the UK. Why was the British government covering up for Iran? There's something there in that story that we need to think about. And if we have time, which, knowing my typical track record of getting carried away with one subject, we probably won't. But if we have time, we're going to have a bit of a Bible study towards the end of the program. Well, like I said, the breaking news from this morning, two oil tankers were hit in the Gulf of Oman. In the fallout, just already oil prices, crude oil prices are shot up, I think, about 4%. They were actually pretty low. They've jumped up because of this attack. These tankers were struck in kind of a similar area to where the U.S. accused Iran of using naval mines or some other means to attack some oil ships almost exactly a month ago. One of the foreign ministers, I think this was Oman's foreign minister, they tweeted that it is that suspicious doesn't begin to describe what likely transpired this morning. There was a ship, the Norwegian-owned Front Altair, that is suspected of being hit by a torpedo. That came from Taiwan's state-owned petrol company. There was another ship there. And so you've got a serious attack. This was just a little bit outside the Straits of Hormuz, that naval choke point where about 40% of all internationally traded oil goes through, which is just staggering. I talked about this a few weeks ago, and I'm still staggered by the fact that so much of the world's oil comes through just this really pretty narrow oil choke point. I think that was one stat I saw this morning. 40% of all the world's internationally traded oil. I'm trying to remember some of those other stats that we talked about when we did the show a few weeks ago. But a very large percentage of global oil going through this one narrow choke point. And now you've had another set of oil tankers attacked in that. The Jerusalem Post had a good article this morning that Brent sent to me that they must have put together pretty quickly after this attack, where they said that these attacks, they're much more serious than even the attacks that we saw just a few weeks ago. So this article starts just after 8 a.m. on Thursday morning. The sound of explosions and a distress call were reported in both Oman and Pakistan. Earlier in the morning, the U.S. Navy said it had received distress calls at 6:12 and 7 a.m. The reports were picked up soon afterwards by Al Alam, which said two explosions had been heard and that two giant oil tankers had come under attack. The two calls could be linked to two different explosions that were heard. This article goes on to state, it's important that Iranian media picked this up because it indicates that they sought to push the story rather than throw cold water on it. Press TV put up a breaking story, so did Sanim News. Shortly afterwards, Al-Mayadeen, which is pro-Syrian regime, also had several tweets about it. So potentially even they're pushing that. Oh, here we go. I said that the leadership results were going on and we could get a result any minute now. We'll break from one breaking story to bring you another one. This just in on the conservative leadership elections. Boris Johnson gets 114 votes from MPs to be the next conservative leader, which puts him, you know, very, very close to and the way it works is the conservative MPs keep voting until they've whittled it down to two individuals. And then those two individuals go out to the grassroots Conservative Party members, around 100,000 or so people that are, you know, that are members and contribute to the Conservative Party. So with Boris Johnson coming in the lead with the... it looks like he's set now to... With that result, he is definitely going to be in the final two. And he is very, very popular with the Conservative grassroots. So it's looking very like Boris Johnson is going to be our next prime minister. I think this is probably the closest that you could have at this point to having it in the bag. So with that very strong showing in the first round of votes, it wouldn't surprise me if you start to see people pull out now, and we could see Boris Johnson, I think, in 10 Downing Street very soon. I am speaking off the cuff about this breaking news, but that's the way it looks to me right now, that it's heading for a Boris Johnson prime ministership. Now, it is possible that he could, he's very outspoken. Sometimes that gets him into trouble if he says something a bit too honest, I guess, or controversial. Potentially he could lose votes, and if that total goes down, that could hurt him. But barring that, it seems like he is odds-on favorite and very clearly heading now for number 10 Downing Street. So very interesting to see in the UK. I'm sure that's something we'll have more to see about when it's not just a breaking news story popping up a few minutes into our show. Back to our previous breaking news before we were interrupted by that breaking news. These attacks going on in the Red Sea. Or not the Red Sea, near the Straits of Hormuz. So going back, we were just quoting from a Jerusalem Post article. They're talking about, they were just making the point in there that the Iranian news media are playing this up, which indicates that the government doesn't want to shy away from confrontation. They're kind of keen to even emphasize this attack. But I'll read just a little more from this article. It says, this is a huge problem for the world's oil traffic in the Straits of Hormuz and represents a massive escalation. It is not yet determined who did it, but obviously fingers will be pointed at Iran, a likely culprit. Iran has threatened to close the Straits of Hormuz before in light of US pressure and sanctions. But what does Iran gain by doing this right after the visit of the German foreign minister and the current visit of the Japanese prime minister? And that's kind of a good question. So I think there's still a lot we don't know on this story. It is interesting. I think one of these ships... I think one was bound for Taiwan, one was bound for Singapore. But in what I read this morning, I thought I saw that one of them might have been Japanese-owned or something like that. So to attack that while the Japanese prime minister is visiting the country is a pretty aggressive move. But this article basically, it just asks, why is this going on? Why is this happening? It writes, clearly a regime that targets oil tankers is not the moderate one that it wants to portray itself as, nor is it the victim. Iran has claimed to be the victim of U.S. economic terrorism, but striking at oil tankers is actually economic terrorism. And that's what it looks like Iran could be doing. A very pushy move. Going on, reading more from this article, it says, this incident, if it is shown to have been caused by torpedoes or Iran, will require a U.S. response. And I think as people start waking up and in the U.S. and as America starts reacting to this, we're sure to hear more about this during the day. The article continues, the sabotage in May, which came after the U.S. had warned Iran that it would respond to threats, was papered over because the U.S. administration does not actually want a major conflict with Iran. The Trump administration's policy is to threaten and sanction. It doesn't want war. But now within the administration, there will have to be discussions about how to respond. Going on to this from this article, it also says this incident will also spread some fear and panic along the Gulf because all of these tankers and ports are exposed. Iran has shown through its naval drills that it has a variety of weapons at its disposal. This includes precision missiles as well as drones. Recently, an Iranian-backed Houthi rebel unit fired a cruise missile that struck at a Saudi airport. That was another story that that we saw today. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But this J-Post article goes on. Iran knows that it can probe for weaknesses against U.S. allies and that allies can't respond because none of them can risk a major war with Iran. A war would destabilize the entire Gulf. And then towards the end, it writes, oil tankers are rarely sabotaged, and even more rarely do they suffer explosions. Now, in the space of 1 month, 6 ships have been damaged. As we learn more about the extent, a major emergency in the Gulf could develop. And like I said, with 40% of internationally traded oil going through this Gulf, this could be something of huge significance. And if you want to know more about some of these oil price politics and how it can tie into world events, we did talk about this on the show a few weeks ago. I had a trumpet brief on that subject, but are we heading for a time of high oil prices? Also, yesterday's trumpet brief from Andrew Miller talked about, not specifically about Iran, more about Germany and the role that oil played in World War II and the way that the role that oil is very likely to play in upcoming world events. If you haven't read that, I'd encourage you to do so. And please do sign up for our trumpet brief so you can get those, not particularly brief, I must confess, messages from trumpet writers, I guess the trumpet bit is accurate at least, in your inbox every day with some analysis of some of the most important events that is going on. Not necessarily the breaking news each day, but the understanding that you need to really know what is going on in the world. I did mention that other attack that we saw, I think that came yesterday, where Iranian allied rebels struck a Saudi airport. Here's an article from the Wall Street Journal on that from yesterday. They wrote that more than 20 were injured in an attack that Saudi Arabia said deliberately targeted civilians. The Saudi-led coalition said the projectile struck at an arrivals hall at Abhada Airport in the southern part of the kingdom in what it said was a deliberate targeting of civilians that could amount to a war crime. They had a spokesman, Colonel Turkik Aymaliki, probably shouldn't have even tried to pronounce that, saying that this attack showed the continuation of the Iranian regime's support and practice of cross-border terrorism. General Frank McKenzie, the head of the U.S. Central Command, he also talked about the attack. He said that they were still in the early stages of figuring out who was behind it, but that he said that it pointed to another sign of heightened tensions and threats from Iran. So we're seeing lots of threats from Iran right now. Well, what's behind that? What is Iran doing? Well, like I said, we're going to find out more, I think, about what's going on in the Gulf of Hormuz, the Straits of Hormuz, as this news unfolds. But we'll take a quick break, and when we get back, maybe I'll have a bit more to update you on the Conservative Leadership Party elections. And then for the main story, we'll talk about some of the bigger picture of what Iran is doing, because this is a huge story. It's something that indicates a major trend in world events, something that really will and really does directly affect you and your life. So when we get back, we'll talk about this bigger story of Iran's role in world events.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Like, as I told you during the first half, we got a bit of breaking news with the conservative leadership elections. And I said, well, the results of these elections seem like Boris Johnson is almost certain to be the next prime minister. During the quick break, I hopped on Twitter, and I'm not alone. That's very comforting. Tim Shipman, who has written several books on British politics. I think he's the correspondent for The Times at the moment. But his quick take was breaking. Boris Johnson guaranteed to be in the runoff for the leadership and is almost certain to be the next prime minister. So I am glad that my off-the-cuff take is confirmed by a very serious journalist. If anyone is following that particularly closely, the results of today's outcome mean that Esther McVeigh, Mark Harper, and Andrea Leadsom are out of the leadership contest. They didn't manage to get enough votes to stay in there. Of the other people involved in the race, Boris Johnson came first with 114 votes. Way behind him, we had Jeremy Hunt with 43. Jeremy Hunt used to be pro-EU. He voted to stay in the EU in the referendum. He has subsequently switched sides, but not really a very hard Brexiteer. Michael Gove behind him at 37, Dominic Raab 27. And behind them you had Syed Javid, Matthew Hancock, and Rory Stewart. But looking very likely that Boris Johnson will be the next prime minister, which is very interesting times for the United Kingdom. It certainly will be refreshing to have somebody who at least follows through on his statements in the last few weeks and months, is prepared to stand up for Europe, isn't going to just roll over and take whatever the European Union deigns to offer us. He said that Britain will leave on October 31st with or without a deal. So he said he'll go back to the European Union and he will try and get a better deal. And if he can't, well, then we'll just leave without one. Now, I don't think we're out of the woods entirely with British politics. There's still the fact that the House of Commons could try and stop Britain leaving without a deal. I think there are some ways the government could get around that, some constitutionally unorthodox ways, I guess they would be, but still there are ways they can get around that. Whether they do that or not remains to be seen. So I think it's still going to be a very interesting few months for British politics, but for someone living in the UK, it's some pretty hopeful news. It also, there was a poll published recently that basically showed that with Boris Johnson at the head of the Conservative Party, they would win a large majority in an election and that he would do best against Jeremy Corbyn. And I mean, we don't really take sides in politics as such, but I find it very hard to see how we could keep doing the work here, how we could keep Edstone going with a Jeremy Corbyn prime minister. So that prospect has diminished. So some interesting, some exciting news from the UK. But I wanted to come back and talk to this main story about this massive stockpile of explosives for a terrorist attack that was uncovered in London, uncovered and then covered up. Uncovered by the security services. They told the Prime Minister, who was David Cameron at the time, this was in the autumn of 2015. They told Theresa May, who was the Home Secretary at the time, and who went on to become Prime Minister. They were both briefed about it, and they both decided to say nothing. Now, it's a remarkable story that I don't think has gotten the attention that it should. The Telegraph put the investigation together, and I think they splashed it on their front page, so I mean, good for them. But outside of the Telegraph and outside of Israeli media, I haven't really seen this story talked about much at all. I mean, the odds are, unless you subscribe to our Trumpet Brief, because I wrote about that on Tuesday, or visit our website, or I guess unless you follow the Telegraph or Israeli media closely, you won't have heard of this story. Which I think is pretty surprising. Hezbollah, they had stockpiled 3 tons of ammonium nitrate. They got this from it's a certain type of ice pack, uses ammonium nitrate. So they had 3 tons of the stuff. Now, this is the same explosive that was used in the Oklahoma City bombings. And while if you're listening over the air, I don't think I need to tell you much about the destructiveness of that attack. Nearly 160 people killed, 700 injured, you know, a good part of a building just blown to smithereens. And this particular Hezbollah plot, they'd stockpiled even more than that, even more ammonium nitrate than was used in that attack. And this was stockpiled right in London. So you would have thought thwarting this attack would have been pretty big news, something that was pretty important for a whole lot of people around the world, very important for the British government to tell people about. But instead, there was no response. The police arrested one man, and then he was released. They let him go. I guess they were so keen on keeping this secret that they didn't want to put this individual through court, so they just let him go. The government didn't condemn Hezbollah or Iran. This March, so just a couple of months ago, 3.5 years later, after that plot, the British government still hadn't designated Hezbollah as a terrorist group. That's what they did in March. And even while they were discussing that designation, the Prime Minister, they didn't tell Parliament about this. During that whole debate, there was no mention of, oh yeah, by the way, this group that we're discussing had 3 tons of explosives ready for a terrorist plot in the heart of London. That apparently wasn't worth mentioning. The general public was never informed about this. So apparently an Iranian-backed terrorist group can stockpile tons of explosives in London, literally tons, get caught red-handed, and then face zero consequences. Why? What's up with that? Well, let's just talk a bit more about the facts of the case before we get into that. But I think that's a very important question, and a question that tells us a lot about the state of the world today. But the Telegraph, that they, like I said, they published, it was their investigation. They spent several months digging into this. They wrote that it became clear, according to well-placed sources, that the UK storage was not in isolation, but part of an international Hezbollah plot to lay the groundwork for future attacks. So they don't believe that Hezbollah had necessarily finalized an attack by the time that they found this explosive, that they were just stockpiling it. Save for a rainy day or for the future, which fits in right into Hezbollah's planning methods, where they tend to plan attacks even if they don't intend to carry them out imminently, so that they can draw on those plans at a later date. So they were getting up these caches of weapons spread around the world. A few months before the London attack, there was a similar stockpile of explosives discovered in Cyprus. This time they did arrest someone, Hussein Bassam Abdallah. He had 8.2 tons of ammonium nitrate. And he said that the explosives were being used for a terrorist attack. So he admitted to this. Now, Israeli media, they unveiled more about the attacks after the Telegraph piece. They had an article, or the Times of Israel had an article again just today, report Hezbollah planned huge game-changing attacks on Israel targets globally. So more background, and I guess the Israeli media discovered that Mossad tipped off the British Secret Service. That is how they knew about this. And it states here, for 3.5 years, Israel's Mossad intelligence agency played a cat-and-mouse game with Hezbollah terror groups to stymie its effort to establish storehouses from Thailand to New York, an Israeli intelligence official confirmed this week. So it talks about the cache found in North London, and then say, well, other caches planted by Hezbollah cells were discovered in Cyprus, Thailand, and in as yet unnamed European countries. So it wasn't just London, it wasn't just Cyprus. All around the world, Hezbollah had been building up these massive stockpiles of explosives. And again, it was all uncovered. Governments all knew about it, or at least heads of states and intelligence services. And it's been secret for the last 3.5 years. The Israeli paper Yedioth Ahronoth, I probably butchered that again, But anyway, they quoted an Israeli intelligence official saying Hezbollah is preparing for a situation in which it will decide to seek revenge, whether for something taking place between Israel and Lebanon or for an attack on Iran's nuclear site, and has established an enormous cache of advanced explosive materials. So basically, according to this Israeli intelligence source, Hezbollah had been setting all of this up so that if Israel attacked Iran's nuclear program or Hezbollah in any other way, Hezbollah could have all of, say, a massive... I mean, imagine an Oklahoma City bombings taking place in major cities around the world, all against Jewish synagogues. That's the kind of thing it looks like Hezbollah was planning and getting ready. And as soon as Iran, or as soon as Israel did something, and once they were ready, that's what they would have unleashed in the world, on the world. But why was this not talked about? Well, the suspicion in the Telegraph piece and echoed elsewhere is that the cover-up here was all about the Iran nuclear deal. That it was part of a global cover-up that we're starting to see now of Iranian activities in the run-up to that nuclear deal. And this is something we're getting more and more information about each year. And there was a great piece in the Jerusalem Post talking about some of that cover-up. We'll quote from that in a minute, but you might be thinking, okay, well, fine, but isn't this old news? You know, the Iranian nuke deal, that's happened. U.S. President Donald Trump has gotten rid of it. You know, fine, Hezbollah stockpiled this weapons. It's horrible the British government covered this up, but it's old news. Why do we need to really pay attention to that? And perhaps that kind of thinking is why this story hasn't gotten more traction. But I think it's worth covering for a couple of very important reasons. I mean, firstly, the Iran nuclear deal is still affecting the world. I mean, yes, Mr. Trump has overturned it. He is confronting Iran. And I think in the long run, the world is a safer place because he's standing up to Iran, at least to a certain extent. But at the same time, there's a certain amount of shutting the stable doors after the horses have bolted. Mr. Trump has done what he can, I think, to reverse the nuclear deal and the damage done. But not all of that damage from that deal is easily reversible. You know, you had those floods of cash that came into Iran. That's happened. They've got it. You had even the damage to America's prestige and the different ways that Iran humiliated the US. Now, again, I think Mr. Trump has reversed some of that, but still, those memories of how America reacts under a different type of president are still there. Well, and then even just the Iran legitimizing its relationship with Europe, with the UK, with Russia and China, that's happened. The UN sanctions are gone, and you know, Mr. Trump is putting a lot of pressure on Iran, but France, Russia, China, they all have veto power on the Security Council, and they can veto any attempts to bring in fresh sanctions. So... yep, we're still seeing the Iranian deal is still impacting world events. And it bought Iran more time as well to work towards a nuclear weapon. And they've continued with their missile development, etc. So that's one reason why it's worth talking about. But also, the Iran deal exposes an important reality about the world that we live in. Now, here's what Mr. Flurry had to say, Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry had to say on a Key of David shortly after that deal was signed.
Greetings, everyone. I believe that all of our presidents, from President Reagan on down to the present, have not stood up to Iran the way they should. Now we have the U.S. that has just made an agreement with the Iranian leaders, a nuclear agreement that we've talked about for quite some time. And I think that it is something that everybody needs to ponder because it involves everybody.
This is something everybody needs to ponder. Something we all need to think about. Now, the timing, like I said, the timing of this cover-up with Hezbollah is significant because the discovery of the London explosives came a few months after Britain and the US had signed their nuclear deal with Iran. And then that deal went into effect on January 16th, 2016. So had this plot been publicized, it would have been right when the Iranian nuclear deal was all over the news and just a few months to the run-up to implementation day. And it would have put even more pressure on U.S. President Barack Obama to back out of the deal. And it fits right in, like I said, with a similar pattern of lies and cover-ups. We've talked about this on this show. Trump, Mr. Stephen Floyd generally keeps you pretty up to date with the way that we're seeing now that the Obama administration covered up and spread lies for that nuclear deal. For example, we've used this quote before on the show from the May 2016, the New York Times in May 2016, writing that the way in which most Americans have heard the story of the Iran deal presented, that the Obama administration began seriously engaging with Iranian officials in 2013 in order to take advantage of a new political reality in Iran, which came about because of elections that brought moderates to power in the country. So this whole narrative, they write that this was largely manufactured for the purpose of selling the deal. So the whole way that most people heard about the nuclear deal was all manufactured. It was made up. It was fake news. And we've covered on this show the way that the different parts of this deal were suppressed. You might remember a few years ago we had I think Mr. Stephen Flohr and I did an interview on it where in 2008 the U.S. government launched a top secret investigation of Hezbollah's activities in Latin America. And some of these operations were huge. I remember being shocked when reading into it. The Drug Administration Agency, they estimated that Hezbollah was earning $1 billion each year from drug trafficking, weapon smuggling, and money laundering. $1 billion each year. David Asher, who played a major part in the secret investigation, he called it the largest material support scheme for terrorist operations that his agency had ever seen. So just a massive amount of money involved. You had the reserves of U.S. dollars present in Lebanon doubled over the course of just a few years, largely because of this finance operation. You had skyscrapers being built around Beirut because of the influx of cash into that area, thanks to Hezbollah's smuggling operations. The Lebanese Canadian Bank, that was a major part of it, became one of the fastest growing banks in the world. And Hezbollah, they used this money to buy an especially dangerous type of improvised explosive devices that was being used against U.S. troops in Iraq by Shiite militias. So they're funding weapons that they can use to attack the United States. And so there's a pretty massive national security need to go and uncover what was happening here. I mean, these were terrorist activities in America's backyard that were funding Hezbollah to the tune of billions of dollars, that were creating strong links with Hezbollah into Latin America that they could easily use against the United States. So you'd have thought this would be a really important investigation, one that would get a lot of support from the U.S. government. But that didn't happen. Instead, the Obama administration killed the investigation. Josh Meyer looked into this a lot in a piece for Politico called The Secret Backstory of How Obama Let Hezbollah Off the Hook. And even at the mainstream media, as kind of cushy that they normally were to Mr. Obama, they were pointing out that this was him letting a terrorist organization off the hook. He was doing this deliberately. In that article, he wrote, Obama administration officials threw an increasingly insurmountable series of roadblocks in the way of this investigation. Senior investigators were transferred to other duties. And basically, within months of the Iran deal, the investigation was effectively dead. He wrote that as a result, the U.S. government lost insight into not only drug trafficking and other criminal activities worldwide, but also into Hezbollah's illicit conspiracies with top officials in Iranian, Syrian, Venezuelan, and Russian governments, all the way up to Presidents Nicolas Maduro, Assad, and Putin. So America lost all of this intelligence because they wanted to cover this up in the run-up to the Iran nuclear deal, because they didn't want any bad news around that time, negative news about Hezbollah, and about that, because Hezbollah is so closely associated with Iran. So they shut down this investigation, basically. And right around the same time, the British government chose not to inform anyone about Hezbollah stockpiling enough explosives to destroy a good-sized apartment block. Now, did they do that independently? Did they collude with the Obama administration in order to not rock the boat on the Iran deal? And it certainly fits a very murky pattern of anything going against the Iran deal being covered up. Seth Thransman had a really good article on this on the Jerusalem in the Jerusalem Post on Tuesday. And he wrote that the British government's cover-up here fits a disturbing pattern of attempts by intelligence and law enforcement agencies to track Hezbollah's global activities, only to have them met with the cold shoulder at political levels. This may be part of a wide-ranging attempt by Western countries to curry favor with Iran's regime and downplay the depth of Iranian penetration of foreign countries. So there's a whole pattern of politicians covering up for Iran and Hezbollah. He wrote that the Iran deal becomes murkier with each revelation. So we're seeing more and more evidence of cover-ups. He asks, for instance, what role did the deal have in empowering Assad's war against the Syrian rebels and fueling the conflict in Yemen with the Iran and or fueling and the fueling of the conflict in Yemen with the Iranian-backed Houthis? So did the US government cover up or help basically by letting this nuke deal go through, help Iran keep Assad in power, help Iran back the Houthis in Yemen? And now you see more and more headlines all the time about the number of children and civilians being killed in that conflict. A conflict that exists because of Iran working with a terrorist group to try and gain control of another key naval choke point. Are all those people dying because the Obama administration was wanting to cover up and work with Iran? Going on with this article, this individual, Seth Thransman, writes, the revelation in the UK are another point of light in an otherwise opaque cloud that has hung over the Iran deal. So there's an opaque cloud surrounding the Iran deal. Why was so much effort put in by Western powers to do this deal? Given Iran's track record and its continued behavior in Europe among Iran and its proxies, why did Western governments think it would be moderated by the deal, when in fact it appears Iran got more brazen in 2015? So he can't even, it's like, well, why did people even think this would work? It doesn't even seem rational. And this journalist sees that. Like, well, I don't even understand why they were signing these deals, why they thought that this was a good idea. It just doesn't make sense on any level. The article continues, in addition, with each story, such as the current one in the UK, questions remain about efforts that were put in place to keep information from the public, media, and members of parliament in different countries. So a global cover-up, even, of Iran's nefarious activities, of groups like Hezbollah. Whether the US was actively pressuring other countries to suppress evidence of Iran's aggression, or whether the UK was acting on its own initiative, well, this cover-up shows more evidence of this dangerous spirit of appeasement in Britain and America. And Mr. Flurry had a couple of Key of David programs talking about what was going on with the nuclear deal. And it is important to understand this cover-up, as I said. Now, if we've seen this as some massive appeasement of Iran, and an appeasement that it's pretty obvious that it was not going to work. But here's what Mr. Flurry said about this in a Key of David program. I think this was right around the same time that this Hezbollah plot was uncovered.
But if Iran's a terror without nuclear bombs, what are they going to be with nuclear bombs? That's why this nuclear agreement, I believe, is the worst foreign policy disaster ever made by America. Or the worst foreign policy deal, and it is just a massive disaster. And you're going to see it very soon. I'm telling you, it won't take long. They've broken over 20 nuclear agreements already, every single one, as I said before, and yet we go ahead and walk into this and act like they can be trusted. They cannot be trusted. They lie as a way of life.
So they've broken all of these deals in the past, but we somehow think that we can trust them. And again, also, this is around right around that same time the plot was uncovered. This is the September 2015 trumpet. Mr. Flory wrote, "There are some stunning similarities in how the world treated Germany in the years preceding World War II and how the nations are treating Iran today." He talks about the way that Britain and France tried to appease Hitler, trying to give away parts of Czechoslovakia to appease him, to stop him being so aggressive. And it didn't work. I think we all know that. And he continues in this article, "The reality of the situation is that Iran's nuclear deal is also going to lead to war. But this time it will be far worse." He said it's going to be about 10,000 times worse because we're talking not just about conventional warfare, but nuclear bombs. And back then, you know, Germany kept pushing and Britain and America just kept kind of hoping that the problem would go away. And it very obviously didn't. "Only superior will and power stops a madman," Mr. Flory wrote. "No words will stop this king of terror because he believes he has a religious duty to bring upon the world a nuclear cataclysm so his messiah can return. No matter what happens, these religious zealots feel like they are winners. The Persian nation is going to continue pushing and pushing, and probably soon it will push with nuclear capability." And we saw today where that gets you. You get 6 attacks on oil tankers in all around the Straits of Hormuz in a month. It gets Iran threatening to really kind of detonate a nuke underneath the global economy by cutting off oil here and sending prices skyrocketing. In Leviticus 26 and verse 19, God warned that he would break the... He said, "I will break the pride of your power," to Britain and America, that we disobeyed him. And, well, that's what we see in this Iran deal. That was even the title of the Key of David that I played the clip from just now, "Pride of Your Power," or something along those lines. Britain and America, even Britain, really. I mean, Britain's got some aircraft carriers and nuclear missiles and is still, an insignificant military force compared to what it was, but still something that with enough willpower could take on Iran. But Britain and America, we lack the will. And we even have the historical parallel to see where this is leading, but we just still walk down the same path. But there's more to this willful cover-up to Iran's aggression in support of this nuke deal. I mean, like that Jerusalem Post writer drew attention to, it just doesn't even seem to make sense rationally. And here's another clip from a Key of David from Mr. Flory on this subject.
"Look, you can examine this closely, anybody can, and see that something is not right. Something is terribly wrong about this debacle, and you're going to be a part of this terrible world that's coming in the future just before Christ gets here."
So, you know, there's something not right about this. Anybody can see there's something not right. There's something terribly wrong. So what is going on here? Well, let's talk about the unseen spiritual dimension behind this Iran deal. Because the Bible makes clear there is a devil and that he hates mankind. You know, anyone who believes the Bible is the word of God has to accept this. That's there all over the Bible. And it's only logical that such a devil would love the idea of nuclear war, that he would want to push the world towards nuclear war. This is what Mr. Flory wrote in his book, Great Again. He wrote, "Mr. Obama's appeasement of and support for the Iranian regime cannot be explained logically." And that's what the Jerusalem Post article was getting to as well. He writes, "Such a catastrophic policy can only be understood in the context of the satanic deception that blankets the entire world." And he references Revelation 12 and verse 9. We might as well read that. We've got a few minutes. But that verse is critical to understanding what is going on here. That verse states, "And the great dragon was cast out, That old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world, he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And Mr. Flowery, writing in this book, he said, those efforts shoved the world closer to the brink of nuclear annihilation, and nothing could please the devil more. And he quotes from this verse, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world, had his fingerprints all over those developments. He passionately hates mankind and loves causing the death of millions, even billions. And why so many lies surrounding the nuclear? Why this opaque cloud, as the Jerusalem Post put it? Jesus Christ himself spoke about a father of lies. And that's the important spiritual dimension behind this nuclear deal. That's what Mr. Flurry talked about in that Key of David program as well. Here's a quick clip from that show.
But your Bible says these millions of demons and Satan the devil are working behind the scene. It's not like it just says that in one verse in the Bible. There are multiple verses in the Bible all about that. But people say, Christians will talk about being religious, but do they really talk about what's in the Bible, which is the only basis for their Christianity? Something to think about.
Yes, indeed. And the Bible talks about this unseen spirit war taking place all over the world. And that's what you need. That's the dimension you need to understand why there's all of this murkiness surrounding that Iranian nuclear deal. Now, the Bible, like I said, it talks about that unseen spirit world. And it tells us that the devil will get his nuclear war, but it also tells us that God is ultimately in charge of everything, including the timing of that war. But this reality that Satan is cast down, that is something that's really important to understand world events. Now, that we read in Revelation 12 and verse 9 about Satan being cast down to this earth, that was an actual event that happened. You can know when it happened. Mr. Flurry talks about that in his book, America Under Attack, and you can go through and use that to prove exactly when this crucial event happened. But I'll just read you some quotes from that book. Mr. Flurry wrote that marked a major turning point in history. It has radically altered everything that has happened since: culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations, everything we do. So we have to understand this spiritual dimension because it affects everything we do. And Mr. Stephen Flurry spoke about this in depth on yesterday's show. So if you want to understand this more, you can go back and listen to that as well. He spoke about this spiritual dimension to world events. But just going back to some more quotes from that booklet, he wrote, "What are these evil spirits doing? These are beings with awesome power. Surely their being cast down to this earth would have enormous impact on world affairs. We must be seeing things happen that would indicate the reality of this end-time Bible prophecy. How did it affect this world? And how much is it going to impact your life?" He also says in that chapter, "God's word stands or falls on whether or not we can prove this, and we certainly can prove it. He also talks about, we'll just read Revelation 12 and verse 12 as well. This says, "Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time." And Mr. Flurry, in that booklet, he writes, "The fact described in Revelation 12:12, prophesied to occur just a short time before the second coming of Jesus Christ, is one of the defining spiritual truths of our world today." So it's something we need to understand. It's one of the defining spiritual truths. It's going to have a major impact on our world. And one of those impacts that Mr. Flurry drew attention to is the nuclear deal. And this worldwide cloak of deceit, this opaque cloud surrounding Iran and what they were doing right around the time that nuclear deal was signed. And that's another big reason why it's worth following up on this story. Even though, okay, you have the nuclear deal, it was, 3 years ago that it went into effect, and President Trump has overturned it, at least from the US's point of view. But this is why it's still worth following. We're seeing evidence of this defining spiritual truth of our world today. And seeing that in action, really understanding that defining spiritual truth of the world today, seeing that spiritual reality in world events, you know, affecting concrete events, affecting headlines in your newspaper, seeing and understanding that is going to have an impact in our lives. You know, seeing that there's a devil that's cast down, that is deceiving people, that is putting people in an opaque cloud. Oh, well, that is going to, if we really understand that, well, we're going to change things in our own lives. We're going to work hard to make sure we're not deceived, to resist that, to stay close to God in prayer and in Bible study, drawing on God's power, knowing that we can't resist that deception ourselves. That the only hope we have in resisting that deception is drawing near to God. And again, that's something that Mr. Flurry spoke about in his Bible study yesterday, going through James chapter 4, among other scriptures, talking about how we can resist Satan. So as we see these events, well, they can have an impact in our lives, realizing the dangers of the times that we live in, helping us be vigilant. And it was another verse Mr. Flurry went through yesterday, where in Peter it talks about, you know, the devil in 1 Peter 5, you know, watch you, be sober, be vigilant, for the devil is a roaring lion, seeks whom he may devour. And we can see that reality in these kind of news events and in studying those booklets, America Under Attack, Great Again. And there's a lot of hope here too, though. I know it can be a bit of a, you know, talking about Satan and demons being cast down, it could be a dark subject. But there's a lot of hope here too. We just read in Revelation 12 and verse 12, Satan is angry, he's in great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. We don't have much time left. But then also, as the Great Again book makes clear, you know, God is in overall control here. God is allowing Satan to do this, and God is in charge of the timings. You know, he has a purpose. He is letting Satan have a major impact in world events as part of God's plan, as part of his plan to ultimately bring everybody to repentance, to give everybody, even everybody who's ever lived, a chance to understand God's truth. And then, you know, he has that plan, and he's in total control of the timing even of that plan and how it unfolds. You know, he'll speed things up and he'll slow things down. And one of the things that book talks about, Great Again, is that under Mr. Trump, well, God is saving America temporarily from some of those dangers, from some of that satanic attack. And in our upcoming Trumpet print edition, Brent Nachtigall is working on a piece about how God is saving America from, well, even in the Middle East, with Iran. And so there is some temporary restraint with some of the actions that Mr. Trump is taking on Iran. God is ultimately in control here. So there's an encouraging side of this as well. We see with God in control, we see, well, God is more powerful than Satan. Like Mr. Flurry talked about yesterday, you know, he's in control of world events. He can and will be in control of our lives if we let him, if we go to him for that help. And so understanding this spiritual war, well, it's critical to understanding world events. It's critical to our own lives and understanding what's going on in our own lives. And that's explained in detail in our free books, America Under Attack and Great Again. If you've not read those, I'd really encourage you, go on our website, thetrumpet.com, and you can get those books. You can read them online. We're more than happy to send you a free print edition so you can study that closely, read it along with your Bible. There's a whole chapter in Great Again that talks about the Iran nuclear deal. And that chapter is the critical background you need to understand this, you know, seemingly bizarre and incomprehensible story of Hezbollah's terror plot in London and the British government covering it up. Well, that chapter in Great Again, it gives you it helps you understand why. It gives you the background you need to understand that event. So you can get those booklets at our website, thetrumpet.com. You just go there. The top right-hand corner, there's a tab that says Library. Click on there, click on Books and Booklets. You should be able to find both of those. And like I said, you can read them online and we'll send them to you. Well, that's about it from me today. All being well, Mr. Stephen Flowey should be back with you tomorrow, having just arrived in Edmond, Oklahoma, speaking to you from our studio over there. You can email the show at td@kpcg.fm. We'd love to hear your feedback and tune in again tomorrow.